FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and hey, today, hard to believe, it's already January 8th, 2018. And, well, the Trump agenda, the Trump train, or as I call it, the Trump bullet train, is moving right along. And you know that Trump has already appointed one Supreme Court justice, with probably more on the way. But first, housekeeping. Hey, be part of the show. We really enjoy getting your emails and your tweets. So email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed is @KerryLutz. So what is it about Gorsuch that makes him such a uniquely qualified and outstanding judge? And what is it about him? Well, the person you're about to hear from has written a biography. Gorsuch, the judge who speaks for himself, and all judges should speak for themselves. And his name is John Grenier. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Hey, so Gorsuch, what's your take on him?
Well, I have known Judge Gorsuch for a long time, not very personally, but I have had lunch with him. I did a book with his mother back in the 1980s, when a couple of years after she had been forced out of the Reagan administration, and he was then in a prep school. And so I've been aware of his intelligence and his unfailingly conservative views, which were as firmly held then as they are now. I mean, he's not somebody who has come lately into a convenient political philosophy. That's what he always believes. What he is the real deal. I mean, if they were looking for somebody who matched all their criteria, then they found him, man, because what you see is what you get.
Okay, so what exactly is his philosophy, his jurisprudence bent, if you will?
Well, he's very much an originalist and a textualist.
So, meaning?
Yeah. I mean, he fits right in with the justice he replaced, Justice Scalia.
Okay, so as far as originalist, just tell us, what does that mean?
Well, you follow the Constitution and its precepts at the time they were written. You don't take into consideration changes in situations or the legislator's intent when they drafted the particular law. The words stand for what they stand for, and you're supposed to follow that.
And okay, so but times change, don't they? How do you?
Well, times change, but this judicial philosophy does not.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, if it doesn't change, but look, like the argument that the left will use is, well, they didn't have automatic rifles in 1787.
Yeah, right.
The Constitution. They didn't have grenade launchers. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, the way Judge Gorsuch would respond to it is that you follow the law as was written at the time it was written. You cannot change it in regard to newfangled inventions as the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people find that lawyers find that an extremely limiting view.
I mean, I can kind of understand that, but things do change. I mean, we used to pay for all of our product services. You used to just go to the store and use gold and silver. Now we have paper. Don't you like reconcile that with originalism?
I don't think you can. I mean, that's the nub of the problem.
Uh-huh. So,
but
yeah,
you see, the Judge Gorsuch is very specific in his idea of what a judge should do and what a judge should be, and he does not. The last thing he wants to see is judges legislating. If there's something wrong with the law, then you go to the legislature and have them change it. But judges should not take that upon themselves.
So, what about things that have been done, you know, in the name of helping people, like Social Security and things like that, which may have effectively been, shall we say, unconstitutional?
Right, right. Well, what he said, once it's passed, as he said several times during his confirmation hearings, it is the law of the land. Once it's the law of the land, then you have to follow it.
Okay, so law of the land, income taxes, things like that. So everything they've done unconstitutional so far, they can basically get away with. But
Yeah, if you want to undo that, you go back to the legislature and have them, you know, as they were trying to do with Obamacare.
So what about, you know, what about when you do have situations where, you know, what they're trying to do is totally unconstitutional? How does that work exactly?
Well, I'm not sure that the people who the originalists would say that it was totally unconstitutional. But if you have an example like that, then the two sides argue it out, and then the justices vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now that we're 9 again, we're going to get a decision.
Right. So the question is, like, what about gay marriage, which clearly there's no constitutional basis for? And the court's prior decision recently, several years ago, was, hey, it's a constitutional right, and we need to have this. What happens?
Well, it has passed the Congress, so it is the law of the land, and he would follow it. The same thing is true of Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. And abortion. I mean, people are going to be divided on these issues for a long time, but once it's passed the Congress, then it's the law, and we're all supposed to follow it.
Okay. So that's it. Basically, it's settled law, as a certain occupant of the White House would call it, and we're done.
As of the moment.
Okay. So what has to change for the court to, like, change things? I mean, you see many times the court, John, will reverse precedent, overrule precedent. Does that mean that he's not in favor of ever striking down precedent?
Well, no. I mean, he knows that's the way it works, and I don't think he would have any trouble with that.
Uh-huh. So if they go back to Obamacare, say, all right, and say, mm-hmm. This is a hypothetical, of course, and I know it's a little difficult to answer, but case comes back again challenging the individual mandate or any other number of issues raised in the original case. Is this his opportunity to basically get payback here and set the record straight?
Well, no. I mean, that's not his function. He's in the judiciary. That has to come through the legislature first. And then it gets tested as to its constitutionality if it passes.
Right. So.
No, but, you know, it just has to wait for the machinery to work, put it that way.
Okay. So, you know, like so many of these activist judges, if you will, you don't say, oh, you know, we don't like the way things are now. We're just going to change them effectively and just do what we want to do. It's like kind of like they screw up and we're all stuck with it.
Yeah, but again, it's they have to have a case before them. Mm-hmm. They can't just go in. The justices can't do that themselves.
Yeah, there's got to be a controversy at issue, right? So,
right.
Understood. So what is the best way to approach these things where there's been real congressional overreach and, you know, what happens?
Well, get somebody to propose a new law.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then that, of course, has to be passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the president. And then if it's a field and it gets up to the Supreme Court, they can decide whether it's constitutional or not. I mean, the travel ban is sort of in that category.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just interesting that you see so many things, so much government overreach. You know, like, I'm curious, what happens if a marijuana case goes up to the Supreme Court, if they'd ever hear it, which you have to realize they only hear about 80 to 100 cases a year out of thousands are submitted.
Right.
You know, what happens there? They just have to pretty much blindly follow the law as it's currently interpreted?
Well, you know, the process is, do they deny or do they accept certiorari, which means they will study the case again. If they deny cert, they're not even going to, that case doesn't even get argued before the court.
So, and then, you know, like, they certainly have been very hesitant to reexamine any more Second Amendment cases coming from states, you know, the 11 states that have very restrictive gun laws. I just wonder if that's a question of the composition of the court or if that's a question of judicial philosophy by Gorsuch at all.
Well, I mean, he's just one of 9. You know, you are stating it as if he has more power than he actually has. They have to, first of all, decide to hear the case, and then they vote. And he's only one of 9 votes.
Right.
But in political reality, some things just don't get challenged because the people who did the challenging figure there's no chance of getting to the court.
Right. So he's only one. He's of course he's only one justice, but he's ascended to Scalia's position on the court. So doesn't it kind of make him, again, the conscience, if you will, and in many ways the backbone of the conservative members of the court?
No, I don't think so. Even though he had come out early, the leading conservatives on the court basically are the Chief Justice and then Alito and Clarence Thomas and now Gorsuch, but and with Ken Green, the swing vote. But of course, those people, their philosophy is well known. So when you try to count the votes ahead of time, you have to take that as a major factor.
Right.
I mean, I don't think Gorsuch has been gets an A plus from the people who wanted him on the court in the first place. But I'm not convinced that it's always going to be that way. He definitely has an independent streak, and I think he's going to surprise from time to time. But so thus far, he certainly hasn't done it.
Right. Well, it's interesting because you never know what the court's going to come up with, which is why it's always a bad idea to count on the courts to fix the mistakes or the overreach of Congress. You know, maybe we'll see Gorsuch's true influence when there's hopefully another conservative appointed to the court.
Yeah, and that could certainly happen.
Yeah. So,
given the age of some of the justices.
Yeah. So any predictions for what Gorsuch is going to do, what his influence is going to be on the court?
Well, you know, when I started doing the research, I kind of thought I might find out that he was a closet liberal, and I was quickly disabused of that notion. I don't think he is at all. He is just as they proposed him, a strong conservative and one who doesn't. And, you know, he's come out much more vocal, vocally as a proponent of his views than most first-time justices. The first day on the court, he asked all sorts of questions. He asked more questions than almost all the others put together. So, you know, he's not shy. But, I mean, I interviewed a lawyer and a couple of lawyers in Colorado who had a case before him, and it was a rape case in the University of Colorado. And Judge Gorsuch was, the lawyer was arguing on behalf of the young woman that brought the case who had been sexually assaulted, expected to have his 15 minutes, and then, you know, the other side would get to argue. And he said they got the 15 minutes, and he was about to sit down, and Gorsuch says, no, keep going, we want to hear more. So this guy was amazed that he was given so much time, and he said, and I have it in the book, that he thinks that Neil Gorsuch would be the best friend of females, best friend of women in the federal court system.
Yeah.
That's a pretty strong statement. But he already has two daughters, and he's very proud of them. So, you know, somebody was kidding me. They said, you know, you wrote a book with his mother, now you've written a book about him. I suppose you're going to write about his daughter when she becomes the first female president.
That's fine.
I don't think I'll be around for that, because I think she's only 15 or 17 or something.
Yeah, well, hopefully we all will be, but you never know.
Yeah, well, you never know is right.
Yeah, so what was it that made you decide to write this book, John?
In part because I had known his mother, and I had met him. And in fact, when he was named to the Federal Appeals Court in Denver in 2006, he invited me to his investiture, which was a nice surprise. And as I said, lacking a crystal ball, I didn't go. But now I wish, of course, that I had. And interestingly, coincidentally, the first review of the book is done by one of his former colleagues on the appellate court, Judge Tim Timkovich in Colorado. And I'm happy to say he gave it a positive review. He did it for a legal publication called Law 360.
That's really interesting. Well, I'm glad that you decided to write the book, and we are definitely going to check it out. Just tell us, hey, is there a website we can check you out on? And obviously,
no, I don't have a personal website or one for the book.
So obviously, we can get the book on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and where fine books used to be sold, right?
Right, right, yeah. And don't forget your local bookstore if you're lucky enough to have one. And Simon and Schuster has a separate page, so you can just, of course, it's Simon and Schuster, and read about it there.
Great, Simon and Schuster, of course. Hey, well, thank you so much for the contribution, John, and we'll look forward to checking out the book. For questions to John, myself, and you want to be involved in the show, email address again, kl@carrielutz.com. The Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And don't forget, go to our webpage, sign up for our newsletter. We got a great webinar coming up on January 17th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And we're going to have Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist, Andy Schechtman over from milesfranklin.com. And we're going to have my good friend Rick Ackerman from rickackerman.com. John, thanks so much for coming on. Been a pleasure. Great luck with the book.
Thank you for the invitation.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.